Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, January 20th, 2008, and this is show number 131. Well, I'm back from a whirlwind one-day trip to Macworld, and I really want to tell you all the cool stuff I found out, the cool people I talked to, but first we've got to get a little business done here because we've got a couple of interesting emails. Chris Morrison wrote in with a very interesting note. Here's a little tidbit for you and your listeners directly from the Q&A section of Netflix. Given the Apple TV announcement, I wonder what will happen. Love the show, Chris. Here's some of the quote that he entered from the Netflix Q&A section. Question, can I watch movies instantly on my Macintosh? Answer, currently the Netflix movie viewer requires Internet Explorer version 6 or later, running on Windows XP Service Pack 2 or Vista. We're required to use digital rights management to protect movies watched instantly online, and right now we only have approval for this protection on Windows operating systems, not the Mac. Apple does not license their DRM solutions to third parties, which has made this more difficult. But we're working with the studios and content owners to gain approval for other solutions. As soon as a studio-approved DRM for the Mac is available to us, whether from Apple or from another source, we will move quickly to provide a movie viewer that enables you to watch movies from Netflix instantly on your Mac. Well, Chris, that's really, really interesting. I actually feel a little bit of sympathy for people like these Netflix guys. I think they did a good job of saying, they won't let us do it, which I actually believe to be completely true. I'd rather they put in an explanation like that than just pretend like we hate Macs or something. They clearly do not hate Macs, but they haven't been able to find a solution yet. A perfect example of why I have sympathy for them, I bought a Roku Soundbridge years ago to stream my audio from my Macs to my TV. Turns out, I'm allowed to play any music I want as long as I did not legally buy it on the iTunes music store. If I just stolen my music, I would not have a problem. I could play it through my Roku Soundbridge. What was interesting to me, though, I was stopping around saying bad things about Roku, but then I read on the box that Windows DRM was supported. But, of course, I didn't have any Windows DRM music. I had Apple DRM music. It was pretty obvious to me that Roku would have done it if they could have, and it sounds like Apple blocked them out like they did Netflix. Apple back then was just had just announced the Airport Express, and I think they wanted you to use that instead. I had bought an Airport Express, but it was stupid because I couldn't see what I was playing. I couldn't choose what I wanted, so I bought the Roku Soundbridge. Anybody want it? Cheap? Well, at all it says here is that I think Steve Jobs in charge of a monopoly is at least as scary as Bill Gates in charge of a monopoly. Maybe worse. Well, Donald Burr wrote in. You might remember Donald of Otaku No Podcast. He wrote in with another suggestion for how I could have solved my TiVo hard drive failure. He suggested that I should check out SpinRite, the hard drive recovery software from Steve Gibson of Security Now and GRC.com. Here's a little bit of what Donald explained. Basically, SpinRite is a complete drive recovery and health maintenance program. It will go through a hard drive sectors, find any damaged areas, and attempt to recover them and bring the drive into working order. And it does this extremely well. It has personally saved my bacon on more than one occasion, and I'm not the only one who sings its praises. Just check out their testimonials page on grtz.com. He gave me a lot more information, but basically it works on any drive with any operating system installed on that drive. But unfortunately, you do need a Windows PC to run SpinRite. So I could have taken the TiVo formatted drive out of the TiVo and slapped it into a PC and run SpinRite on it and possibly recovered the disk. Maybe probably recovered the disk. I like Donald's signature. He signed his email, not an employee of Steve Gibson, Leo Laporte, GRC, Steve's company, or any of their advertisers, etc. I don't even know them socially. I'm just an extremely happy and satisfied customer. Thanks, Donald, for a great suggestion. You know, a lot of people refer to SpinRite's price of $89 as being steep because they compare it to the cost of a drive, but I think what you really need to do is compare it to the cost of your data, which could be priceless. In my case, the data wasn't really very important because it was just TV shows I'd recorded on my TiVo, but I could sure see reasons why you'd want to be able to use this to recover data that was critical. Well, all right, business out of the way, I get to talk about Macworld now. Are you guys burned out on it already? Have you heard about 8,948 people talking about it? Oh, well, too bad. I'm going to talk about it anyway. The main reason I went up to Macworld was because I wanted to go to the podcasters meetup on Thursday night. That was a chance to meet all my homies, you know? I talked to all these podcasters all the time, but a whole lot of them I'd never met before, so I was really looking forward to going up and getting to see these guys. So it started out with a panel with Scott Bourne, Leo Laporte, Dave Hamilton, Ken Ray, Victor Cahiao, Kelly Lewis, and Adam Christensen, and they were a lot of fun to listen to. At the end of their panel discussion, they invited people to come to the mic, and of course, I raced up there and got to be the first one on stage. And, you know, to tell you the truth, they were getting a little bit cranky. They were kind of arguing with each other. They got in this big debate about whether podcasting is plateaued out or whether it hasn't, and whose shows are growing and not growing. And, oh, they argued about a bunch of stuff, and I was kind of tired of that downer. So I jumped in and I asked them each to describe their aha moment in podcasting. You know, that moment when they realized how cool and fun this was really going to be. I retold the story I've told you before about when I first started. I did, four or five shows, and then I stopped. And a few weeks later, listener Neil wrote in and said, "Hey, where's the podcast?" And that's all it took for me. That was my aha moment. It was fun to ask them this because they all really seemed to enjoy reminiscing about the magic moment for them. I think it got them back into the groove of having some fun. So if nothing else, it was good for that. If you'd like to hear the entire panel discussion, keep an eye on the MacCast and the Typical Mac User podcast, because I believe they're both going to be posting the audio there soon. Well, I had a great time all day playing with all of my podcaster buddies, too. I got to meet, who hadn't I met yet? I'd already met Don McAllister of Screencast Online and Victor Cahiao, the Typical Mac User podcast. I talked a little bit to Ken Ray from macOS Ken before, but I got to goof around with him a little bit more. And, of course, I've known Adam Christensen of the MacCast for quite a long time. But I did enjoy meeting some of my buddies for the first time. David Sparks from MacSparky.com and I have talked a zillion times and never met. Katie of the MacCore.com, I even got to co-host on her show, and we'd never met, but we have now. And Jonathan Cost of Mac Tips Daily at ThinkMac.net. Got to play around with him, too. It's really fun to finally meet to people that you've just talked to for ages. I still wish I could have met Steve Stanger and Tim Verporten. They weren't there, though, but someday I'm going to meet those guys, too. Well, anyway, after the panel discussion, there was a Mac Mingle, and that was really fun. Basically, it's just a big party. But what blew me away was complete strangers walking up to me and go, "Hey, I really like your podcast. It was really fun. I have fans. You're really out there. You really like me." I want to give a little shout out to James, Timothy, and Regina, who all talked to me, and I made a point of emailing me myself their name so I could remember to say hi. I should mention one thing. Before I left for Macworld, I went back and forth on whether I should bring my OLPC with me. You know, the one laptop per child. The main reason I actually bought it was to show it to people. I mean, I wanted to learn about it myself, but I figured I wanted to, you know, spread the word of what this thing is and what people are, what they're trying to do with it. So I thought people at the show might be interested. Well, I'm so glad I did bring it because, I was carrying it in my backpack for the first half of the day. And then after lunch, I just took it out and started goofing around with it. And I'm telling you, moth to a flame. People were just coming up and going, "Hey, what is that? What is that thing?" And a lot of people knew what it was and were going, "Oh, I've always wanted to touch this." Overwhelmingly, the thing most people say first is, "Wow, it's a lot smaller than I thought it would be." And that was pretty much Steve and my reaction when we first opened it, too. Everybody on the show floor and everybody I showed at the party that night really seemed to get the idea. You know, they understood why this was important and why this was going on. A lot of people said that they meant to buy one, do the buy two get one deal so that they could donate one, and they never got around to it. So anyway, that was pretty fun, but there was one guy who didn't get it, and it was so annoying. This guy got in my face with, "Well, why don't we have it? Why can't we have them here? We need these here. Why can't we have them?" And I mean, he was practically yelling at me. I had to just like pack up and walk away because he wouldn't stop giving me a hard time. And the whole time he's yelling at me, "Why can't we have these?" I'm thinking, because we have laptops? Because we have electricity and money and technology? Oh, well, they can't all be winners, right? Well, anyway, at the Mac Mixer, I met two really interesting people, Joseph Bustillos and Regina Wagner. They're both educators in California. Joseph teaches middle school while Regina teaches high school. I thought they were both fascinating. We bonded immediately over the fact that we had all bought the OLPC. We talked for hours, and at one point, I whipped out my Zoom H2 recorder and I recorded some of our conversations. Considering the fact that we were in a bar with about 150 people eating and drinking and talking and laughing and dropping glasses, I do want to say the H2 did an amazing job of recording our voices. If you don't remember what that is, go back and read my show right after Christmas. I talked about the H2 and all of its benefits and what it's supposed to do. When I was recording these two, I didn't shove it quite far enough into Regina's face, so she's a little bit quieter, but I hope you can still hear enough of the conversation to enjoy it. I'm at the podcast Mingler, Apple Mingle thing, and I'm talking to Joseph Bustillos and Regina Wagner, who are both educators, and they are both owners of the OLPC. And I told Joe he was being brilliant. I told him he had to be brilliant twice again. So what were you just saying to us?
Okay, so what I was saying was I teach computers, and the lie about teaching computers is people want us to teach applications, you know, Office and Word and those. And the original studies done at MIT, which was the foundation of the OLPC, was you don't teach applications because any trained monkey can do that.
And applications change over time.
Right, yeah. So whatever I teach, if I teach my sixth graders Word, by the time they're in the workforce, if they're working with that same version of Word, then we've done something wrong.
Actually, the worst part is they're teaching them all PowerPoint.
Right, exactly. Cramming
them into that little box that ruins your brain, right?
But what we're supposed to do is teach them programming, which is where the OLPC comes in, so that they learn how to manipulate the device and they learn how to think. And so it helps them in communications, literacy, and it, you know, it grabs that natural childlike curiosity.
Now, I did notice that an awful lot of the OLPC is programming.
Right.
It's like, I thought there'd be all kinds of games. Like I saw, what was it, Snippy or Zippy or whatever the little snake guy is.
Right, right.
And I go in there and it's Python.
Right.
And I thought that was really interesting that it wasn't a lot of programming. No. I mean, it wasn't a lot of games. It was programming.
I understand also there's a key combination where you can literally manipulate the OS on the XL and learn the code. You can see the code.
Well, you can actually go into the terminal and you can see Linux in there. You can go into there. That's why I think we were talking about there's a hack that lets you, or not a hack, there's a shell script you can download that lets you use WPA encryption.
Which I still need to do.
Yeah, actually, no, they did a great job on the wiki. They walk you through step by step. I mean, a monkey could follow the steps because I did.
Okay.
Just copy and paste the code right into terminal.
Actually, what you do, you download on your Mac, you download it to a USB drive, and then you move that, then you put that USB drive into your piece, into the OLPC, and then they tell you how in terminal to navigate to the file and move it and run it. And after you reboot, you've got WPA encryption. Regina, you teach 11th and 12th grade, you said?
I teach a class that was supposed to be called Web Design.
Oh.
But I was not going to teach them Dreamweaver or GoLive because I actually refused to learn that in my master's of class. I said, no way, because it's too technical. The kids just want to put stuff online. Why do I need to learn how to do that? Well, the point is to put stuff online. So I was not going to teach them, you know, HTML when you can sign up for a Blogger account or a WordPress account in, you know, less than a couple of minutes.
Now, did you do external accounts for these blogs that the kids put up?
Yeah. So the first part of the class, well, the class I'm teaching is more like just Web 2.0 and how to use the web to learn. So the first part of the class so far, which is the first year, so I'm kind of
figuring it out as you go along like the rest of us.
It's mostly theory, like law, learning Creative Commons, what you can and cannot do.
Now, what grade level is this?
Most of the students in this class are juniors and seniors.
Okay, they can handle that.
Yeah, you're teaching them about Creative Commons.
Yes, so we learn about Lawrence Lessig, going to
sweet.
Primary resources, and went to write to Lawrence Lessig and heard a couple of his keynotes, basically, from OzCon and places like that. And so now, just this last week, they're having to put the theory into practice, and they put some blogs live out there to see if they can do it.
Did you talk? The EFI guys are here at Macworld. Did you talk to them?
Yeah, I sure did. They wanted. I got a card from a lady who's in charge of education, and she wants to use my class as guinea pigs and see if they can get some educational materials.
You also,
out.
You could probably do a Skype call with her in the classroom.
Exactly. Yeah.
Get now, are you behind? Are you in the public school system?
Yes, I am.
So, are you having any problems with any of the barriers, like the firewalls, and as far as down? Because I know I can't use Meebo. I can't use a lot of the Web 2 tools behind my district's firewall.
Interesting.
Meebo, we can't use Twitter. We can.
Okay.
So oh, I can use Meebo. I can't use Twitter.
Yeah. So I'm choosing to use Twitter so they can have their own little personal learning network.
Okay.
So that's kind of how we're using that.
You know, I feel bad for the security guys that are blocking this stuff. You know, don't you think they're like the little guy with his finger in the dike?
Finger in the dike. I always think of that, too.
A combination of that and a warfighter going, fall back, fall back. Right. You know, we lost the battle about the cell phones, but let's stop them before they use cameras in their cell phones. Oh, no, they've got cameras. We got to fall back, back.
Yeah, that's a war they can't win.
Yeah.
Because you've got, number one, at that age, they have limitless energy. And if they want to get to that Flash website to play that game,
they're going to find a way. Well, I'm going to find a way.
You know?
Yeah, that's what I love about Skype. I've had trouble with Skype behind the firewall. I just try it next week. And Skype has figured out a way around it. So there's no stopping Skype. You can get that one through. Well, this has been fun talking to both of you guys. And you guys did fine with the microphone. It didn't paralyze you at all.
My last line there was because they kind of looked like a deer caught in the headlights when I picked up my H2 microphone. They're like, oh, she's going to interview us. Oh, no, it's too scary. But I think they did fine. I really, really appreciate them having the discussion on the live mic. And I don't know. We just had a really good time. I sure would like it if Joe and Regina would write to me. I didn't get your contact information, so I can't find you. Anyway, send me a note, you guys. Well, I did some more recording on the show floor as I wandered around at Macworld, but there's not enough time to play those this week. As a teaser, I'll tell you the two that you're going to get next week are one was an interview with Jean McDonald of Smile on My Mac. She was talking about Disc Label, their software for creating nice labels for your CDs and DVDs. I do that a lot because Steve is crazy on making videos, and so I do it a lot, and I hate doing it because I do it in Photoshop, and it's just so irritating and annoying. So I'm really looking forward to doing a review of the software, too, after you get a chance to hear about it because it looks really cool. The other interview is going to be a treat for Sam Caldwell, friend of the show and the host of the Windows to Apples podcast. As you might remember, he likes speech-to-text software, and he was extremely disappointed with the iListen software, which up till now was the only option available on the Mac. iListen is written by the folks at Mac Speech, and at the show, Cindy was demonstrating their new software. It's either Dictate or iDictate. I forget which. Anyway, it turns out they're the same people who made iListen, and this new Dictate software is actually built on the Dragon engine, which is the basis for Dragon Naturally Speaking, which is the most fantastic speech-to-text software, but it's Windows only. So the Mac has never had really good software like this. Cindy's demo was very intriguing, so I hope you'll enjoy listening to the interview next week. The audio quality is a little better than it was in the bar. Well, before we kick in with chit-chat across the pond, where Bart and I discuss the various actual products announced during the keynote, I wanted to tell you about the most exciting thing that happened at the show. I met John C. Dvorak. You know, Dvorak.org/blog. Anyway, I was wandering the show floor just by myself, just tooling around, and I saw this guy walking, holding a camera way above his head, and he's just walking around with it like that. I recognized him right away, and I said, John, what the heck are you doing? He turned around, and he told me he was making a little movie, and he was having fun, and he was just really nice, so I, of course, talked to him, and I gushed a little bit about how his is the only video podcast I watch regularly, which is actually true. I'd watch Dignation once in a while, but Cranky Geeks is a really, really interesting show. And it was kind of funny because he said, well, did you like the one with so-and-so and so-and-so? And I'm bad at names when I've met the people, I've known them for years, and I've been to dinner at their house. There's no way I'm going to remember the names of someone on his show. But then I realized he just said two men's names, and it's pretty rare that he has two men that you haven't seen before. And I thought, maybe it's that one that he did about the about publishing. These guys were professors, actually, talking about the publishing industry and changes in new media and everything. So I said, oh, yeah, that one about publishing? Yeah, that was a great episode. And anyway, I think he got a kick out of the fact that I actually knew the one he was talking about, and it proved I did know what he was talking about. So anyway, we chatted for a little while longer, and then he graciously accepted the podcast, my podcast business card, which I forced on him. You know, you can't skip a chance to plug the show. Anyway, he was great fun. He was delightful. I posted a link in the show notes and in the right sidebar to all my photos of Macworld. There's not that many of them, but I think they're pretty fun. You can see a picture of me with John C. Dvorak, of course, if you go to the show notes. I took all but one of these photos with my new Sigma f1.4 fixed 28mm focal length lens that I've been talking about, and it just works spectacularly. I never needed a flash. They came out really good. I think you might get a kick out of the very last photo. It's a high resolution version of the panorama I took of the crowd. So I took four pictures, again, with no flash, in a darkened bar of the crowd. It's technically interesting because I used the HP Panorama stitching software that I've talked about a couple of times to create the panorama. I can't find any errors in it. And this is pictures of people, and nobody has two heads or a half a head or three heads or anything. It's really weird. I defy you to find anything. If you click on the photo and then click on it again, all 17 megabytes of it will come up on screen so you can zoom around and try to find an error. So one guy in the back looks a little weird, but I'm not sure if that's really an artifact or he just has this kind of a squished up face because the people in front of him are not messed up. Well, maybe if you were there, you can even find yourself in the crowd. Well, it's time for another exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from bartbouchatz.ie. How you doing today, Bart?
I'm doing just fine, Alison. Yourself?
Oh, I'm doing okay. I think I'll make it through. We're actually recording on Sunday instead of Saturday. It's just crazy here, huh?
Yeah, and it's horribly morning for you.
I know. It's dreadful. Well, let's see. We have a lot of fun stuff to talk about Macworld, but first we have to eat our vegetables, eh?
Well, something like that. If you remember back to show 124, we told everyone about the horrible vulnerability in QuickTime that was exploited through RTSP. We explained how people should protect themselves. And then on show 126, we sort of blew the green whistle and said, yeah, all is good. You can undo that. Well, I'm afraid to say you have to do it again. There's another one. Yeah, exact the same vector of attack. RTSP, Windows and Mac are affected. So if you're running either or, you're in trouble.
But didn't we just get a patch for QuickTime?
We did. It fixed a load of security problems, but not that one.
Yeah. So you want to walk us through real quick how to turn RTSP off again?
Well, it was a case of we installed a little thingy, syspref add-on, which was called default app. So when you click on that, you simply go over to the URLs tab, then you scroll down to RTSP, and then you just change the little drop-down thing from, it'll say QuickTime, change that to disable, and then you're done.
So if people did it last time, it should be pretty easy to repeat. Or if they want to go back to show number 124, I think we have the links to the download of that pref app, that preference and everything, right?
Yeah, and we have a discussion on just what it does and why we want it to do what it does, etc.
All right. All right. And as always, you'll tell us when we're allowed to turn it back on?
Yes, we'll do, which hopefully will be soon.
Okay, sounds good. All right, let's do the fun part. Let's talk about Macworld. So obviously neither Bart nor I were actually at the keynote, but luckily for us, Victor Cahiao of the Typical Mac User podcast was in the keynote, and he became our little personal feed as he typed in into chat what was going on during the show. So that was kind of fun for both of us. Unfortunately, there was a lot of trouble with all the little tools staying up. I think Twitter crashed, and we got knocked out three or four times out of iChat, and had a lot of trouble getting through, but it was kind of fun to listen to, I thought, through Victor.
Yeah, it was nice to have someone on the inside who was sort of watching it all live. I think I had four or five different sources. There's a post on my blog with just a screenshot of a dedicated space I'd set up for watching the keynote, which had various different sites and our IRC channels and all sorts of stuff up there, and a broken Twitter very shortly after the keynote started. So I managed to catch the news anyway, but it was nice to have Victor in there and to be able to chat away to him.
Yeah, what did you think of the keynote itself then?
Well, if you stop and think about it, what they actually announced was absolutely fantastic, but it didn't seem as fun as other years because the surprise had been pretty much totally ruined by the fact that all the rumors were right.
Yeah. Well, except I didn't get iMovie and iDVD for Windows, right? We were just making stuff up towards the end of that.
Well, okay, our mad, insane predictions didn't happen, but of all the sensible stuff people were predicting, it all happened. If it hadn't been leaked, it would have been like, oh, wow, cool. But the fact that it was leaked, technically it's still as good, but it's just not as exciting.
Yeah. I wonder if Steve's mad or what happened this time.
Well, you know, last year we sort of saw this as well because we heard that there was a phone coming, but it wasn't too bad because none of the rumors had told us how cool it would be.
Right, right. Well, speaking of cool, the MacBook Air.
Well, it's one hell of a technological marvel, isn't it? I mean, how on earth can you get an entire computer into the teeniest of weeniest of little spaces? I mean, you have some fantastic photos up on Facebook. You know, when you see the photo of you holding it, you know, between your two fingers, and it really numbs the brain as to how on earth they could do that. And they actually had to have Intel make a special chip for them and all. So it really is a marvel of technology.
Yeah, I can't believe that thing. I mean, it seems like people like to talk about what something doesn't have, but considering what it's doing, it's pretty amazing what it does have inside of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we talk about what it doesn't have, it's yet another example of Apple being brave. They were the first to ditch the floppy drive, and everyone thought they were insane. And now they've ditched the optical drive.
Yeah, how often in your laptop do you actually use the optical drive? I mean, it really, you know, maybe 3 or 4 times a year?
Well, I use it a little more because I like to burn DVDs because my laptop has a faster drive than my Mac Mini. But ordinarily, if my Mac Mini actually had a proper, if I'd spent the extra money for a proper super drive when I was buying it, I don't think I'd ever use the optical drive in my laptop.
Right. Now, one of the things you were saying to me was that you thought it was a terrific second computer.
Yes, absolutely. This is the kind of computer where if you have, you know, you have your normal Mac at home and you're working away on it, and if you're the kind of person who travels a lot, you want something light yet still powerful that you can just grab, stick into your bag, and away you go. I mean, it's not small in the sense of its, you know, length and width. You know, it's about A4 size, I guess. So thin that it really can just slide into any bag. But I don't think if you had were the kind of person who only had one computer, it just wouldn't do because it doesn't have FireWire, doesn't have Ethernet. It has just one single USB port. I mean, you couldn't live on that as your only computer. But to go on the road, I really can't think of anything better.
Right. I think that definitely is the case. You know, people, it's funny, the things people are excited about is the backlit keyboard. Wow! You know, I have a backlit keyboard on my MacBook Pro, and, you know, 4 or 5 times a year, that's kind of nice. It just doesn't seem that important to me.
Yeah, but okay. But if you're the kind of person who flies a lot, particularly nighttime flights, wouldn't you be exceptionally happy with that backlit keyboard?
Maybe it's because I'm a touch typist that I don't care. I know where the keys are.
Actually, I really like the backlit keyboard. When I'm working at night, it's great that I don't have to have the lights turned on very high.
I guess so. It's not bad. Well, see, I was actually a little more excited, I guess because I'm probably not going to get a MacBook Air, but I was a little more excited actually about the Apple TV and movie rentals.
Absolutely. I think that's a real game changer. You have, you know, the music business and then iTunes store came along, and you're going to have the movie business and then these iTunes rentals are going to come along. I think it's going to change things for the better from the point of us little consumers. But of course, yet again, us Europeans don't get to play.
When? Do you ever get it?
Well, Steve did say in a big excited voice that he really wants to get this international this year. So I hope Ireland is on his list of international.
Yeah, does it count? International is kind of big.
It's kind of the whole world, and it's not going to happen. He's not going to get it everywhere.
Right, right. But he usually starts in Europe, at least for you, right?
Yeah, he usually starts in the UK, France, and Germany. Just as far as the iPhone's gotten.
So I was excited about this because, you know, been watching the HD DVD wars, and last week pretty much the HD DVD wars were over because... it looks like Blu-ray is completely is really going to win there. But now I'm wondering, as long as I don't want to buy DVDs, it seems like if I'm just renting HD DVDs, this would be the way to go and not have to invest hardly any money, actually.
Yeah, you know, it's just completely sidelined this whole format war. It's irrelevant what physical format it comes on because we're just going to suck it through the internet and be done with it.
Yeah. Now, I know people were predicting that, but I don't think they realized it would be like 4 days after the HD DVD wars were over.
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing is, we didn't mention yet, but this isn't just a few studios that are on board with this thing. This is them all. I thought Steve did that very well in his keynote, where he put up 6 sort of, I won't say B studios, but the less big ones. And he said, we have these 6 studios on board. And he goes, oh, and these, and the slide flips over, and it's like Universal, Paramount, Walt Disney, Sony, you know, all the MGM. Really big names. MGM, yes, how could you forget those?
Yeah, that is pretty cool. I also like that they put podcasting into it. That's pretty fun. I got to play with that a little bit at Macworld Expo on Thursday, but the way they did it, you kind of only see the featured podcasts. So if you go into technology, for example, as a genre, you see the top 25 podcasts. You can't go any deeper than that. So the only other thing you can do is do a search beyond that. And it's kind of a very TiVo-like interface. And it works. And once you find a podcast you like, you can hook it up to your favorites. But I don't know. I would have liked it to go a little deeper to maybe get to the NoSilicast. That would have been fun.
Actually, I think the built-in search with that sort of virtual keyboard, that's actually a nice improvement, because I really wish the iPod Touch had that.
Oh, man, don't we all want search?
Yeah, absolutely. Something else that was big, actually, with the new Apple TV, well, two things, really. First off, it's a software update, so everyone gets to play. But also the fact that you don't need a computer anymore. This thing can now stand on its own and deal directly with the iTunes Store. Basically, from your couch with your remote on your big telly, you can buy stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be fantastic. You know, I remember listening to Alex Lindsay was talking about how if he's sitting on his couch and there's a song he wants to play and he knows that he's got the CD downstairs, it's so easy to buy on the iTunes Store that he'll buy it on the iTunes Store instead of getting up and walking downstairs and getting the CD. So that impulse buy, or that impulse rental, at least in this case, was is definitely going to make him a lot of money, I think.
Yeah, when something's easy to do on a whim, that's really when you're going to make money.
That one-click purchase is going to kill us all, right?
Well, it's two-click because it does confirm.
Ah, okay. Well, actually, I wonder whether that'll work that way. In iTunes, you can have it set up for one-click where you only click once. Bye,
that's
bye,
that's true.
Bye,
maybe
bye.
I can turn off the confirm, but that's unwise.
Definitely. I think Leo Laporte said he spent $3,000 in the first 6 months on the iTunes store because of that.
Good Lord.
Something like that. Anyway, I was also impressed with the price. I thought that was pretty good. What is it? $229. They dropped the price by $60-$70, something like that, too.
It was $299, wasn't it? And then they dropped it to $229.
Yeah, I believe so. So that's pretty nice.
That just goes to show when they were pretending it was they were saying it was a hobby project, they were just buying time because they were already dealing with the studios at that stage.
Hmm. But I think that was really smart because he set expectations, right?
Yeah, he didn't set them. He completely removed them.
Yeah, the guy's a master, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Oh. You know, just to sideline it so much, oh no, it's just a hobby, and then wham!
He sure does it well. Well, let's see, he came out with something else new called Time Capsule. And let's see, that's basically an Airport Extreme, a wireless base station, but it has built-in either 500 gig of disk or a terabyte of server-level hard drive. It's an 802.11n router, and it's created to let you do Time Machine over the air from all of the Macs in your house.
Yeah, it's a pretty damn simple idea. I mean, I think you're probably the perfect example for this. Weren't you saying how, you know, Time Machine's great, but I can't be running around the house with a hard drive behind me? You know, I don't want to be plugging it in all the time. Well, here's the solution. I really was thinking of you when he was announcing this.
Well, I do kind of sort of have to confess that I did finally get it to work on my little Macstore external drive, which I have been dragging around the house. But it sure would be nice to have that all set up on an Airport Extreme that I didn't have to carry anything around. And having all your backups in one place, I've got all these other backup solutions. I've got, I don't know, Steve's got three or four external drives, and I've got two or three of mine, and you know, one of which that works. And Kyle's kind of funny. He doesn't back anything up at all, which is really odd. And not because he's lazy. Well, he is lazy, but not because of that. It's because he doesn't care about what's on his disk because he lives online. You know, everything's in Facebook or it's in Gmail. He may write a report or something for school, but then once he's turned it in, he doesn't care. He didn't want a copy of it. He doesn't keep anything.
Yeah, I wish I could be like that, but that just ain't going to happen.
Well, what we do is so much more important, Bart, you know.
Well, yeah, and the four external hard drives here in front of me testify to that.
It was funny. Steve and I were talking about when we just rearranged all of his drives because he's got video and he's got a video backup drive and he's got his storage for the raw video files and all this. And we were discussing, okay, when a fire happens, which drives am I supposed to grab when I run out of the house? You know, I guess
none. You're supposed to run.
None of them. No, we'll go get the hard drives, leave the cats behind, the whole thing, you know.
Oh, no.
Well, they can find their way out. They're already gone, you know. They probably started the fire in my house.
Oh, dear. Anyway, before we go down a rat hole, as Leo Laporte would say, mm-hmm. I suppose the other thing we should mention is that some people are very annoyed about this upgrade for what's a slightly odd reason. As in, they bought AirPorts with the port for an external hard drive in, you know, on the sort of expecting Apple to re-enable the feature that was in the beta versions of Leopard that would let you back up to one of these AirPorts and your external hard drive plugged into the AirPort via USB. And that hasn't come back. And now people are saying, have Apple abandoned this and left all these people with a useless purchase? Or what's going on?
Now, they didn't ever technically promise they would do anything with it, did they?
I believe it was on the feature list at one stage. But then when the final 300 came out, it was mysteriously gone.
Okay, so if you were the kind of person who was reading ahead with the predictions of what was going to happen, then you'd be in trouble. But if you were just the normal kind of person who looked at what it said it could do and bought it, it never promised it.
Well, actually, in his very first Leopard, Steve note did say that there will be remote backups with Time Machine, and it just disappeared.
Oh, he did. Okay. Well, isn't this maybe a promise that it could happen, though, now they've got the technology working?
It could, but people are going, okay, he didn't announce this at the same time. What does that mean? Maybe people are reading too much into it, and maybe, you know, when 10.5.2, I think, is that we're due out in a couple of weeks. Maybe when that comes out, it'll magically do all this stuff, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Oh, well, I didn't buy one yet. I've actually never bought an AirPort Extreme, but maybe I'm kind of looking at that. So I was doing some pricing on that. A guy on one of the message boards I read was saying that was a ridiculous price, $300 for a 500-gig drive. But if you take the price of a typical 802.11 base station, you know, a Linksys or a D-Link or one of those, and then throw in the price of an external 500-gig drive, you're over $300 right there.
Yeah, I was going to say, this person isn't really adding up very well. He's thinking of it as just a hard drive, when he should be thinking of it as an entire base station and a hard drive.
I told him I want to shop where he shops, if he can get prices better than that. Yeah, I think they did a really good job on pricing that. And how much is the terabyte, do you remember?
It's about 500. It's $499, I believe.
So that's really not bad for a terabyte either.
It's also tiny.
Oh, I
like
didn't...
Most terabyte external disks are basically the size of two external disks stacked on top of each other because they're just 500 gig disks in one enclosure. But this thing remains tiny even with a terabyte.
Now, is it two 500 gig drives? It probably is, right?
That must be very small.
Hmm. Are they? And they said server type hard drives. Do you know what that actually means?
I'm guessing here, because really technical description at all, but what I think that is it's some sort of SCSI drive rather than a SATA or an IDE drive, I think.
Interesting. Well, we'll have to check.
That is just a guess.
Well, let's see. The last and final excitement was actually something that got you all a tither there, the iPod Touch upgrade.
Yeah, this introduced me to a whole new thing. Like, you know, normally whenever there's a Steve note, I end up ordering something the same day. But I have to wait for weeks until I get to play with it. And I think the Mac Mini was the worst example. I think it finally arrived sometime in March when I'd ordered it in January after the keynote. But this time he announced an upgrade for the iPod Touch, which was $20, and it was available on the iTunes Store straight after the keynote. And it really was. And by that evening, I had it installed and working and was playing away. So instant gratification.
Oh, nice. Gotta love that. So what did it do for you?
It basically turns your iPod into a full PDA. I mean, it takes the applications, all the applications on the iPhone, exception of the phone and SMS, and makes them available on your iPod Touch. So it really becomes an iPhone without the phone, which is certainly not what it was. And when I reviewed it initially, I made it really clear, this is not an iPhone without the phone. This is an iPod with a few extra bits. Now it really is an iPhone without the phone.
That's fantastic. And, you know, there have been a lot of argument about the $20 thing. The people I know who have iPhones or iPod Touches that had to pay the $20 are thrilled with what they got for $20. But there's a lot of people who don't own iPod Touches who are just furious on your behalf for the fact that you have to pay this horrible amount of money.
These people should perhaps read up on the legalities of accounting and stuff, something called the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. Apple have got in trouble before for not accounting properly. I very much like the fact that they're doing this one by the book. Sort of a quick summary. Basically, the iPhone and the Apple TV aren't accounted for in the normal way. Apple may use a new fancy subscription model where they basically say that, you know, the product we ship isn't the final product. For the next year, we're going to give you updates for it. And so when you make your initial contract with Apple, that's part of the deal. You're buying those updates in advance. Whereas with the iPod Touch, it was accounted for in the traditional way, so they can't give you more than they sold you. So they can't just make up these new features and give them to you. They have to account for them properly, and therefore they have to charge for them.
Well, then how come they can give you a free upgrade to the Apple TV?
It's because they're accounting for it on a subscription basis, just like the iPhone.
Really? Huh.
Yeah, those two products are on subscription.
The Apple TV and the iPhone are both on subscription?
Yeah.
Ah. So they get to choose when they sell something, which way they're going to do it, and then that changges how they can charge you for things, or not charge you.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, with the Apple TV and the iPhone, they were telling you at the moment of purchase, what you're getting now isn't everything, there is more to come.
Okay.
Whereas with the iPod Touch, you bought a finished product.
I see. Well, that's pretty cool. I'm really happy for you. I mean, the giddiness in your voice and the fun of that was really cool. I like some of the stuff that go ahead.
Sorry, it made phenomenal difference to me for one simple reason. I mean, the extra apps were dead cool. I absolutely love Mail, and the new Google Maps is cool, but I know you're going to talk about that in a minute. But for me, the biggest difference was the iPhone had VPN support, but the iPod Touch didn't, because that's a pretty high-end sort of businessy sort of thing. But now with this update, it does have VPN support. So for the first time, I can actually use the Wi-Fi and work. So I now basically don't miss the fact that this thing doesn't have Edge, because at home I have Wi-Fi, and at work there's Wi-Fi ubiquitous across the entire campus. So I'm connected all the time now.
That really does make a big difference. I think that's maybe a differentiator people should look at. If they have Wi-Fi available everywhere they are, then the iPod Touch is a fantastic tool for them. The thing you just referred to there, the new map feature that I really like, is there's this... Well, you were explaining it to me. They use cell triangulation from Google and Wi-Fi triangulation from something called Skyhook, which I prefer to call Skynet. But it allows you to find yourself on the map. Now, it's very interesting to me how well it works different places. I tried it at work where I basically can't – there's no open Wi-Fi anywhere near me, and it got me to within maybe a quarter of a mile. I tried it again when I was in downtown San Francisco, and it got to me within feet, which tells you that I was surrounded by Wi-Fi.
Yeah, that's... I mean, even if it gets you within a quarter of a mile, that's still pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think people said what they're looking forward to is, like, you're traveling in Boston, if you've got no bloody idea where you are on the map, you need to find where I am, you know, just get a vague idea, and then you can start reading signs, but you can't start with all of Boston to start, so...
I mean, to be honest, I'd be happy if it just figured out what country I was in for a start, you know, or what state or what city. So I think the fact that it can go down to, you know, a mile or two radius is still exceptionally good.
So some days you don't know what country you're in?
Well, no, obviously I know what country I'm in, but no, I'm just saying, you know, even, you know, for what we had before, which is absolutely no idea where you were, even if it had only been as good as saying you're now in San Francisco or you're now in LA or you're now in New York, that would have been a great help, because you wouldn't have to be panning across half the globe before you can zoom in. It would just start off somewhere that's right. But the fact that they now have it down to bits of a mile or literally a few feet if you're in a built-up area, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it definitely worked well. I was the Apple's favorite customer. I was walking down the street in San Francisco, paying no attention to the sights and sounds of San Francisco. Instead, I'm holding my iPhone up, and I'm pushing the little button to show me where I am. And I walked past a Starbucks, and I thought, wow, I'm going to pick up a cup of coffee. And I looked, and there was a huge line. And I thought, well, this one's too close to Moscone Center, so let me just find all the other Starbucks that are within a quarter of a mile of me. So I typed in Starbucks, and, you know, of course, suddenly there's like six within maybe a block and a half of me. So I ended up walking down to another one and went and got my Starbucks. Now, if I'd been the perfect customer at that point, I would have looked at the iTunes store and bought some music while I was in there, but I didn't take it that far.
No, that's pretty good. I mean, that's fantastic. And all that without having to have an absolute power hog of a GSM chip in your phone. Not GSM, GPS.
Yeah.
Because GPS is a real power drainer. which is why it's not in something like the iPhone, which is so small and such a small battery.
Yeah, I don't miss the GPS at all, that's for sure. Well, we have one final question here. Rose wrote in and asked, should I buy an iTouch or wait? What should I do? She really wants an iPhone, but she lives in Australia, which she says is basically the edge of the known universe. And so she's wondering, is the iPod Touch cool enough? She should get it now, or should she try to hold out for an iPhone?
Well, now with this update, I really think the iPod Touch is cool enough. I was unbelievably keen to get an iPhone until this week, and now I'm not going to get an iPhone until they become 3G, because I wouldn't see what advantage it would give me. I have ubiquitous Wi-Fi everywhere I need to be, so, you know, I have a cell phone that still works. Why would I replace a perfectly functional cell phone with an iPhone?
I see. Now, I guess we should ask her whether she's got a lot of Wi-Fi around her, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. You need to make your own call, really. There's no universal answer. But at the end of the day, it now has absolutely everything on the iPhone apart from the phone. So what you're all you're really missing is the edge network for getting your data on while you're away from Wi-Fi. And when you think about it, Apple haven't even mentioned an interest in Australia yet. I remember Australia being very, very late to get even an iTunes Music store. So I think you could easily be waiting a year or more in Australia before you're going to see the iPhone, if ever.
Wow.
I'm starting to get very afraid that small countries like Ireland may just not get the iPhone.
I'm starting to feel spoiled here.
Oh, absolutely. You're very spoiled. So I'd be inclined to say, you know, the iPod Touch is insanely cool. It does an awful lot of really nice stuff. It works very well, and it's here now. God knows when you get the iPhone.
Sounds good. Carpe diem.
Yeah, exactly. Seize the day, or seize the iPod Touch in this case. Carpe iPod Touchum.
Well, I think that about wraps up our agenda. It might be a good note to cut us off here.
I think so. I think we've probably prattled on for long enough. Until next time, happy computing, everyone.
Bye-bye. Well, I told you there wouldn't be enough time for those two other interviews I did, and I was sure right. So stay tuned for those interviews for next week, but it's time to wrap up the show for this week. Thanks again for all the great feedback you've been emailing to me at allison@podfeet.com. Keep it up. And the comments are rolling in like crazy on the blog, too. I just love it. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.